Thank you, Gia. Appreciate that. Thank you, Chris. Sounds good. Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Hugh. Okay, I'm good to go, are you? Oh, goodness. You know, I'm hesitating because I don't really know what this talk is about. I've been in sort of an ecstatic state of non-duality lately, but I don't really know how to talk about that. So there's that going on, and I just had so many ideas, and I worked on it really hard, but I still don't know what's going to come out. So I'm going to covenant with the Holy Spirit and allow Spirit to speak through me today. The name of this talk is called Sanctuary in the City. It's kind of based on that TV show, Sex in the City. Remember that? Yeah? Can anybody sing the theme song? What? Do, 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 do. Okay, never mind. Okay. Thank you, Holy Spirit. Okay. So anyway, this talk was inspired because of a conversation that I had with one of our former practitioners and staff ministers here, Reverend Carol Lotz. How many of you know Reverend Carol Lotz? Lovely, lovely person. Yes, yes. She was the trainer of our practitioners for quite a while and just a beautiful person and a good friend, and she directed Youth and Family for a while, our Youth and Family Department. And she went to ministerial school and then decided to take a job as a chaplain in the county hospital here in Ventura. She didn't know anything about chaplaincy, had probably not been in a hospital very much, taking care of sick people. She didn't even know that most places you're supposed to have certain credentials before you become a chaplain. The hospital didn't know it either because they hired her. They thought she was really unique in what she could do. So she started this part-time job where she didn't get paid for months and months and months and months and months, but finally they started paying her, and they started really liking her work. And finally, after 5 years, they said to her, Carol, what can we do to get you to come here full time? And she said, I don't know. So the director of chaplaincy, she was a palliative care chaplain, created a PowerPoint. There's magic in PowerPoints that he showed to the higher ups in the hospital, and they ended up giving her a full-time chaplain for the whole hospital. And now she's the spiritual director for the county hospital, which is awesome, right? So beautiful. Such a beautiful outcome. But the part that really inspired this talk is that she said that the head of the hospital called her and said, Carol, you have, Reverend Carol, you have a unique skill set, and we are so grateful to have you here. And when she told me that, both of us started laughing. Because what she can do, I mean, she is very talented and very skilled, but it's really normal to us. It's really normal to us in this center to embrace people of all faiths. It's really normal for us to be able to sit in silence and just allow someone to be where they are. It's really normal for us to be able to look at a tragic situation and yet hold space open for the gift that can be found in that tragedy. And yet this director, businessman, doctor, whatever he was, head of the hospital, told her that she had a really unique skill set. And I applaud that. I applaud that. But it makes me wonder also about how many of us here have a really unique skill set that we've learned here in this community or someplace else. And are we taking it out into the world? Are we taking the sanctuary out into the city? Taking the sanctuary to the streets? You may remember if you were here last week, I spoke about Ram Dass. Ram Dass's guru, Neem Karoli Baba told him that when he left the ashram and had to bring the ashram into the city, he said, here's what you need to do, love, serve, and remember. And so he did. And Ram Dass is well known. Ram Dass is in our choir loft, so he must have made it. He's there behind Krishna. The guy with the flute. It made me think, though, you know, so many of the skills that we have, the unique skills that we have that seem normal to us, and the things that we talk about here in this church, like kindness and forgiveness and being present and being able to see the sweetness in adversity, maybe that is unique to the world. And are we really taking the sanctuary out to the city? take a little leap with me here, if you would. It's a hard thing to measure. And I think that sometimes, because we can't measure it, because it is immeasurable, we don't know that we're actually doing it. How do you measure your value in any situation? How do you measure your worth? How do you measure your worth? Some of us measure our worth on how much attention we're getting, on how much approval we're getting, on how successful we are, on how much money we have. Some of us measure our worth. We say it's a good day if no one has gotten mad at us today. That's just me. Am I leaving anything out? You know, feel free to jump in. It's a small group. How good you feel? Okay, that's more where I'm going. Okay, good. Yeah, and I'm getting a thumbs up there from our singer here, Gia. Also another way that we measure our worth is if we're doing it right, if we're following the rules. Anybody here experience that? If you're following the rules? Sometimes, yeah, or not. If we look good, yeah. If we're thin enough, if we're tall enough, if we say the right thing, which is really hard right now to say the right thing because there's so many wrong things you can say. I can't keep up with what's politically correct and what's not politically correct anymore. It's a challenge, particularly when you have a microphone. I was thinking about how so many of us have been influenced by the Judeo-Christian tradition. I'm reading this fantastic book, which is why I'm in kind of this euphoria of non-dual reality, which means that seeing the world as one, basically. And I'm reading a book by Cynthia Bourgeau, who is an Episcopal priest. She was one of the first 100 female Episcopal priests ordained. And she wrote this book about the wisdom Jesus. And you know what? We've gotten Jesus wrong all these years, Chris. The things that we've learned about Jesus may not have been true. What? Yeah, that was for you, Chris. Yeah. And it, you know, again, it doesn't matter if you weren't raised Christian, if you were raised in a Judeo-Christian atmosphere, or if you were raised in another religion. Obviously, this country is very, very, very much influenced by the Judeo-Christian tradition. But what Cynthia Bourgeau says about Jesus is that primarily, she said, leave his parentage out of it. Don't think about whether or not he's the only begotten Son of God. Leave his parentage out of it, but just consider that there was a Jesus event when there was, and that it had a huge impact on the world. And who was this Jesus but a wisdom teacher? That there were several categories of spiritual leadership back then, and you could be a priest, or you could be a prophet, or you could be a rabbi, which is a teacher. And Jesus was primarily a wisdom teacher. He didn't know he was supposed to be the Savior. He didn't know that. He just learned about wisdom from various sources. Another thing she says is that Jesus was not like somebody that just fell off the carpenter's bench and all of a sudden started channeling God, that he actually learned from a lot of wisdom sources in this very cosmopolitan town of Galilee and Capernaum, and so that he is primarily a wisdom teacher, and that when the Jesus event happened, that is when he died, when he was crucified, that many, many, many streams of Christianity went out all over the world, that they went out and influenced all parts of the world, many streams. But she said that in the West, we are primarily influenced by what we would call Western Christianity, which really means the Christianity of the Roman Empire. And she said in this book, Cynthia Bourgeau, that some of the two of the characteristics of the Roman Empire that have influenced our take on Christianity is, one, that the Roman Empire tended to confuse unity with uniformity. In other words, we all need to kind of think alike or be alike. And they also were very heavily into the idea of orthodoxy. Orthodoxy means following the rules, basically. So if we all, the message was, if you follow the rules, if you follow the rules, if you do it right, and if we all do it together, we can A, conquer the world, and we can B, be good enough to get into heaven someday. We can be saved. Another thing she said about Jesus as Savior or wisdom teacher, she said that there is this whole school of thought that he was a Savior, but there's this other school of thought that says that he was a wisdom teacher. The Savior school of thought says that, again, if we do it right, we will get to go to heaven someday if we're good enough, okay? But the wisdom school says, no, we embody wisdom. We embody this divine transmission of wisdom. And the wisdom is, is that which transforms us. The wisdom is that which saves us in the present moment, in this time, in the here and the now. Because he said the kingdom of heaven is at hand, meaning the kingdom of heaven is here, and the kingdom is now, and the kingdom of heaven is within you, which means the kingdom of heaven is now. She says that the kingdom of heaven was Jesus' favorite word for non-dualistic consciousness, which means the capacity to see everything as one. Non-dualistic consciousness is really challenging to understand. It's hard to explain. It's hard to find the words for it, and that's a good thing. I heard one teacher of non-dualistic consciousness talk about, have you ever heard of the headless way? The headless way? They say, imagine you don't have a head. I don't get it. But if you don't have a head, if you don't have this thinking apparatus up here, which is the dualistic thinker that is really good at sorting and saying this is good and this is bad and this is right and this is wrong, there is something beyond that dropping into the heart that actually knows that it's all embraced in a greater wholeness and that it all is God. It is all omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent God. And as part of the whole, we are that as well. We are in it, and it is in us. So some of our influence, some of our metrics, some of our measure of our effectiveness and our value has been caught up in that. Are we following the rules? Are we doing what is right for some external authority? And are we good enough? Are we good enough? Can we consider ourselves to be spiritual leaders who can have influence in the world and who can shape the world by taking the sanctuary out into the city? And I wonder if it's time to reevaluate the measure of our worth. Certainly, the pandemic threw out a lot of the measures of our worth or our value. I can speak for myself in leading a church through the pandemic where, you know, there's where everything falls apart, the numbers fall apart, the money falls apart. And yet, look what we still have. There's that God again speaking to me. Look what we still have. And in your life, did things fall apart in your life? Did your career fall apart? Did your relationships fall apart? Did your normal way of doing business fall apart? And yet, look at what we still have. We still have life. We still have love. We still have all of this beauty, all of this immense wisdom that is available to us no matter what. When things fall apart, when we wonder about our value, when we wonder about the meaning of life, and when we struggle with uncertainty, and when we struggle with unknowing and impermanence, you know, sometimes we fall apart a little bit. How many of us perhaps engaged in some unhealthy habits during the pandemic? I'm going to raise both hands. I think that's because the old was falling away. The old was falling away, and we were having to be in that place of limbo, that place of purgatory, for lack of a better word, of letting go of the old and waiting for the new. You know, I know that I did about 75 jigsaw puzzles with an animal on it. Each one had to have an animal on it. There was one I did that didn't have an animal on it. It was a picture of the world, so I drew a penguin in Antarctica on it. I watched probably about 200 murder shows. And let's don't even talk about the, oh, I don't know, 30 or 40 refrigerators packed of food that I ate during the pandemic. You know, it just occurred to me one day, because as I was starting to do all these things and realize that they were not serving me, and I was starting to get more into studying mysticism and studying mystical Christianity and studying some of the other mystics, like some of the folks up there, like Rupert Spira, oh, and Joni Mitchell, and Ernest Holmes and Nipun Mehta, and just looking at these things, looking at these qualities. All of a sudden, when I would be in a place of feeling desperate and alone and feeling like things were not going well and feeling like the old standards of measures were falling away, I would recognize it. I would still do the unfortunate behavior, but I would recognize it. I remember one time I got off of a challenging phone call, and I just looked at my husband, and we had planned to watch something educational that night on Gaia Network. And I said, I need junk food and a murder show. That's what we're going to do now. In the middle of the junk food and the murder show, if only I'd been doing a puzzle, it would have been a trifecta, but no. But I put the remote on hold, and I said, I'm eating because I'm empty inside. Click. And I don't exactly know where this talk is going, but I think that part of us being a sanctuary in the city, bringing the sanctuary into the city, needs to address our emptiness inside. There is a good form of emptiness. There is an emptiness where you are a clear channel, where you are a clear channel for the holy light of Spirit to pour through you and bless everybody that you touch and everybody that you see. But there is also an emptiness where you feel like you are unworthy, where we feel like we've got nothing to offer. And the truth is that even if you're here today for the first time, by the end of the day today, you will have something to offer, even if it's just what Bernie said over there. Bernie, who said that she, her measure of worth is how good is she feeling? How joyful is she feeling? That's a powerful measure of worth. It's a beautiful measure of worth, and one that I apply frequently, one that we can all apply frequently. So in terms of looking at new measures of our worth, learning a better way, a better standard of measure, I think that what I was saying before about Jesus being a wisdom teacher, and again, there are other wisdom teachers if Jesus does not resonate with you, but I think to look at our worthiness and our feeling of worthiness and our feeling of well-being is to move into a place where we can somehow find a way to completely align with the truth of our existence, with the truth of who we are, with the love and the kindness and the non-dual perspective that everybody is love and kindness, that everybody deserves to be forgiven, that everybody is part of wholeness, to align with that. And it's not easy. It takes a lot of surrender. The other thing that I've learned from working a lot with Service Space, which is a global service organization that I belong to, is that we have to design always for maximum transformation. That we have to put ourselves in the position where we can always move into greater and greater realms of transformation. And that means vulnerability, that means courage, that means doing things that we're not always comfortable with. That means, listening. That means refraining from arguing. That means refraining from snark, right? I got to tell you, I am not tempted necessarily to participate in the snark that I see, like on social media. And, oh my gosh, Next Door View. Does anybody read Next Door View? Oh my gosh, it's a war. It's like the Three Stooges going, yeet, yeet, you know, to each other. I don't participate, but it's like an accident. I can't look away sometimes. So all of those things open us up to a greater possibility, and we start to explore, and we start to explore what it means to really be filled with value, to really be filled with worth. And it's not worth and value as the world teaches. It is the worth and value of the non-dual consciousness, which is the consciousness of wisdom, which is the consciousness of love. Y'all, am I making any sense? Am I making any sense? Okay, good, good, good. Yeah, and I don't really know how to tell you how to do it other than just stop that stuff that you're doing that gets in the way. Just let it go and allow something greater to, and I'm saying this to myself too, by you, I mean we, to allow something greater to emerge within us, or to immerse ourselves in something greater so that it can emerge through us. You know, and maybe this lecture, it would be better served by an example. by an example of something that happened where I really felt the unitive presence, divine love, non-dual consciousness in the midst of something that was challenging. Some of you know that yesterday we did a memorial service, and it was for someone in the church in the center who was very beloved. It was one of our practitioners, and she died way too young. She was in her 70s, in her early 70s, and she was retired, and she had a full life ahead of her. And it was complicated because her family lived out of town, and they were not accustomed to putting together memorial services, and we don't do it full time. We do it, you know, several times a year. So there was some tension around how to make it work, what to do, who was doing what. There was also some tension because of COVID, that we couldn't have everybody in-house, so we had to do our very first memorial during COVID, and also our very first memorial ever with a hybrid service where we had Zoom people. We usually have a TV coming up here. We had Zoom people on the TV and then people in the house. And there was just a lot of confusion and a lot of stress around it. And finally, and this is the place for all of us to understand, is that it doesn't have to be that way. If something is stressing us out, if something feels awful, it doesn't have to be that way, but we don't have to be the ones to change it. What I ended up doing, and this again was to address my own stress about it, my own concern that we would honor this person appropriately, was simply to reach out to the practitioners. And they prayed. And they prayed for a beautiful service, a beautiful flow where the family would feel honored and where we would be at peace. And there were miracles after miracles. You know, they rippled out, then the ripples rippled back in. The tech worked perfectly. That was priceless. Thanks to our volunteers, our tech volunteers, who are priceless. The family arrived looking distressed and left looking happy. That was priceless. People were safe and respectful with the COVID situation. That was priceless. People on Zoom got to speak. That was a miracle. According to me, maybe not to our tech people who understand that stuff, that was priceless. The reading was beautiful. That was priceless. The people who shared from the heart. That was priceless. And afterwards, this is my favorite part, Annette, our office manager, said to me, "It worked so well because everybody showed up like a volunteer." That was priceless. Everybody came here with the intention to serve. Everybody came here with the intention to honor this family. Everyone came here with the intention to honor the person who had passed away. And it turned into this mystical miracle of good that just wove itself between love and compassion and kindness and grace and goodness. And you could feel the light in the sanctuary. There's this beautiful quote from St. Francis. Who's up there somewhere behind me? St. Francis, who says, "Sometimes, I'm gonna paraphrase it, but sometimes when I stand in a field, the light is so beautiful and so strong that when I get home, I have to wring out my clothes." And that's how it was yesterday. When I got home, I just felt so lifted up by what had happened, and I did nothing. I just showed up and did my part, and the practitioners prayed. And it was a miracle. So I guess the point is that, are there bullet points from that thing that happened yesterday? Are there things that we can learn from that and start applying it to other places in our life? Maybe, maybe not. But I do know that surrender is a key piece of that. I do know that a greater understanding of the nature of reality is a piece of that, that behind any piece, any part of adversity, anything in your life that seems to be going wrong, there is this greater picture of grace that is standing there. It's standing there like a dog waiting to get in the car. You know how they do? They're like, "Give me in the car, give me in the car, give me in the car." And that's how grace is. Grace is there. Give me in your life, give me in your life, give me in your life, right? In my house, at least. And it's waiting to get itself into our lives, but it will not push through. We have to welcome it. So there's a spirit of welcoming, and that's where the surrender piece comes in. That is where the trust piece comes in. That is where the willingness to let it, let go and let God comes in. And at the same time, we have to be willing to cross over our comfort zone and be that light, be that sanctuary in the city, be that choice in the world that we wish to see for everybody through vast forgiveness, through a vast embodiment of non-dual consciousness, which means embodying the consciousness of oneness and wholeness and forgiveness and togetherness, knowing that we are all one, to be that choice, to be that place where we are willing to sacrifice. We're willing to sacrifice our own comfort and our own complacency in order to jump forward and do some good for the world and do some good for others. Are you with me on that? Okay, good. Okay. Because just think, folks, just think what we can do. Right now, we're kind of a small group, but we're mighty. And like I just said, the numbers matter far less. The numbers don't matter at all, I'm willing to say. Lonnie, who called me out one time on worrying too much about numbers in a very rude way, I have to say. But I won't tell the story because I don't think I can say that word in church. But anyway, oh, goodness. The numbers don't matter at all. It is connecting to the truth. It is connecting to the principle. It is connecting to the knowing that God is our source, that grace is our birthright, and that all we need to do is surrender and get out of the way while stretching past our comfort zone. Surrender in itself is a stretch past our comfort zone. But when we surrender, we are often led to do the next right thing. And I'm going to just vamp on what Bernie said over there just a moment. Feeling good, a really, really, really good measure of our worthiness. And I'm not talking about hedonistic good, right? Anybody here familiar with hedonistic good? I know. Raise your hands. Yes, please, please. Yes, yes. Oh, P. Okay, good, good. Yes, Hugh. Hedonistic good. Anybody? Okay, never mind. Okay.
It's a lie.
It's a lie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, here, let me be Oprah. Peter Frank, tell us your experience. Well, I've shared mine. I mean, mine are pretty tame, just puzzles and, you know, jigsaw puzzles. Ooh, that's bad. It's a different kind of good. It's the good of balance. It's the good of being in alignment. It's the good that you feel like when you've had a great massage or a great chiropractic adjustment, right? And everything's in alignment and you know what to do and you know that a presence bigger than you goes with you. It's that kind of good that I'm talking about. And that kind of good, because we have so many distractions in the world. Do we have distractions in the world, people? Raise your hand if we have distractions in the world. Yes, we do. We have a lot of people that are trying to distract us. And I'm not going to call them Satan, because that's not true, and we don't talk about Satan in this church. You notice I have to say Satan with a southern accent, Linda, because I was kind of in that realm when I lived in North Carolina. I also can't say fair. I have to say Pharaoh for Pharaoh. But anyway, there are a lot of distractions, a lot of things, a lot of ego. Let's call it ego. A lot of ego that is trying to pull us out of itself. And it's not like it's against us. It is actually there for us. It is there to get us to go deeper and to anchor deeper into this unitive consciousness, into this non-dual perception, into the mystery, into the knowing that we are one. We are one. And you know what? This center, this teaching has often been a center of self-improvement, and that's lovely, but it's so much more about self-perfection and self-improvement. It is about doing what we do for the good of all. Doing what we do for the good of all. Cynthia Bourgeau has a beautiful way of phrasing that, that it actually is the meaning of Jesus' teaching of love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself. That it's not like over here you love God, over here you love your neighbor, and then you love yourself. But don't you have to love yourself to love your neighbor? It's if you love one, you love all of them, because there is only one of them. It's just all God. It's all good. It's all love. I'm going a little long. and I have more things to say, and I have a little guest coming up here, so I'm going to go ahead and jump to the next part of this talk, which is that it is Memorial Day, and, you know, talk about people that have sacrificed, that have brought the sanctuary into the city, that have served the greater good at their own expense. I wasn't sure who was going to show up today, so I didn't really invite a person, a veteran, to speak. We will do that at another time. But I did want to honor another type of unsung hero today, and that is our teachers. I feel like our teachers have been in a semi-war zone. People that are homeschooling, people that are schooling on Zoom, people that are doing a hybrid system in this past year of this pandemic. And so I asked some of our teachers, how did you bring the sanctuary into the city? Vicky, who's a practitioner, these are teachers that are also practitioners. Vicky, okay, this all started, it's a small crowd, I can say this, right? This all started, this conversation about teachers started because Peter and his dog, Peter Frank, right over there, Peter, raise your hand so they all know who you are. Peter Frank and his dog came to my office on Sunday and they made big potty on the rug. The dog did, not Peter. And and I said, Peter, you owe me. You're speaking in church on Sunday. So when I reached out to the other practitioners, I talked to them about the poop and that Peter owed me and blah, blah, blah. And so Vicky wrote back, I love the pooping on the rug thing. It's good to lead into how my spirituality informs my teaching in public schools. The pooper is good and so is the poop. So, but her point is, learning means making mistakes and working together from learning to learn from our mistakes, okay? So that's part of this sanctuary that she is taking into her school system. She teaches, what, second grade, I think? Learning means making mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes, and then we work together to learn from our mistakes. So my inner spiritual teacher voice says, let's clean it up, be kind, and then have fun at recess. And then Dina, who's another practitioner who is one of our teachers, said that we have something called heart guidelines at her school, that every day is a letter of heart. H, have a positive attitude. E, expect success. A, accept responsibility. R, respect myself and others. T, think before acting. She and another teacher have a kindness club where they have kindness t-shirts and they do all kinds of things like make cards and they share care for each other and they support somebody with an avalanche of appreciation and they watch short videos with lessons on kindness. So you see what I'm talking about here? This is what I'm talking about. It's like we develop the spiritual resources within ourselves so that we see that the whole world is one and that this teaching does not stop in this sanctuary. We bring it out into the world. That's the point. That's the point of what we're doing here. It's not just so we can be an exclusive club that knows the alleged truth, right? Because the truth is always expanding. We know some of the truth, but we don't know all of it. It is so that we can be a group of supportive people that know the alleged truth and then bring out our unique gifts into the world around us to share that truth and bless the world around us. That's the difference between personal perfection and unitive consciousness, unitive perfection, perfecting and embracing the world all around us in our own unique, wonderful, gifted ways. Let's hear what Peter has to say about that. It's Peter Parker. You can use Bill's mic if you want. Okay. Yeah, that's fine. And you can take your mask off if you want.
What's that?
You can take your mask off if you want.
Okay.
Okay.
And I had a couple notes, too, that I, just to keep me on, there we go. Just to keep me on track, I had a couple notes. And first of all, we kind of were blessed with last March, April, May, and June, where we had to kind of try out virtual teaching when the schools closed. So during that summer, I had my plan and my idea of what is it going to look like for the next year. And I had to really just sit and meditate on it, and what did I want? And I wanted to pull the best of the best of what I knew into that year. I also approached it knowing technically it was not going to be a perfect year, and I had to surrender to that. I knew the technology would not be perfect, and I knew technically the way that I structure my classroom, I could not restructure virtually. I just knew that those two would not fit. It almost was like, the classroom, very tangible. and the virtual classroom very intangible. So it actually opened up to an opportunity of infinite possibilities. And I go, wow, this is really cool. I could do so much with this if I approach it from that way. And I had a great plan because I've already learned the way of counsel, which we do here at this church, and they do at LA Unified School District does it, the way of counsel. And I wanted to integrate that. We do morning meetings and connect with the kids that way. And then I also wanted to bring in this great math program that we got for free at the end of the year. And I wanted to bring in the math program that, and just really connect with the kids in a unique way. All excited to start the year, the week before school starts, I get an email from the district saying, your day will look like this. Talk about following the rules. Mm-hmm. We're going to follow the rules. And it was purgatory for about the first month or two. And just kind of prayed and settled with it, tried to conform to that. Then finally they realized that that didn't quite work. So basically it was, I just kept, what am I going to bring to these kids? So we did the way of counsel. So I taught the kids online. We do four basic precepts. We listen with the heart. We speak with the heart. We filter with the heart, and no crosstalk. So they all learn those four precepts. And then each child, I'd bring up a question, and each child would share. So I had children from different schools who didn't even know each other, and we all bonded. And it was really sweet because when spring break came, and I said, well, there's no school on Monday, like, we don't get to see you, or we don't get to see each other Monday? I said, no, we're not going to be there. We all need a little rest right now. The other program that I wanted to bring in, that ST Math, which the district said, nope, we're not going with that. It's too expensive. We have this other program. You have to use it. And I'm like, this other program is excellent. I really want to bring it into the with the kids. And all year long, I was using my brain to figure out how to get that in there. Maybe I could get somebody to sponsor it. Maybe they could do either a district site or a school site or my classroom. And I thought and I thought and I banged my head against the wall for till about January, where I just gave up on it. Then come spring parent conferences, that little tab just happened to pop up. And I go, oh, there's that ST Math again. I'm going to look at it. And all year long, I was clicking on the teacher button. And just clicking on the teacher button, trying to figure out how we're going to get this cost. And right next to the teacher button was the parent button. And, oh, what if I click on that? And I clicked on the parent button, and in it, it said, if your child is being homeschooled, either homeschooling or due to COVID, and they're at home being schooled, you can have free access to ST Math till June 2022. So it was always there. That button was always there. I couldn't see it with my mindset of the way that I was approaching it. I had to approach it a brand new way. And so, fortunately, the next week was parent conferences. So I showed all the parents this link and how they can sign up with their email address for their kid, and they have it not only the rest of this year, but all of next year, so they can practice their third grade and fourth grade math. Really, you know, I was just excited. The parents saw it. They're all excited about it. And then the other blessing that it came in at the right time. If it came in at the beginning of the year, it would have been too soon. Right now, we're in the spring. Everyone's a little bit more tired. We need something new and refreshing, and this was the new thing that we need, that, and all the kids are excited about it. So it fit in the right time and the right place for us. So I really look at it as, you know, I mean, we talk about duality, mm-hmm. and there is a duality of the classroom, the physical classroom, kind of like earth and tangible, and then the virtual classroom, the intangible heaven. So how could I bring, you know, heaven here back to earth as we go on into the next year? What is it that I'm going to take from these experiences that I have had and bring them back so that neither one is ever going to really be the same? That we really change. So the year's ending exciting. I'm enthused at the end of the year. And the kids are happy. The parents are happy. We've learned so much this whole school year. And I'm just really proud of what they've done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peter. Yes. That's great. Thank you. Thank you. You know, and what I hear in that is that it could have gone so differently, as it could have gone so differently in this church. We could have become despondent about what was going on in the world, but instead we tapped into the creative source, and we allow the creative source to lead us to things that we couldn't see before and to open us up to new possibilities. That's what I see for us going forward, whatever it is. Whether you're part of this center or not, whether you're just a visitor for your own personal life, just opening up, surrendering, and moving into that creative source. It takes insight, it takes a little bit of work, it mostly takes surrender. But in terms of the insight piece, just think to yourself right now, what is it that I've learned today? What have I learned about myself and my life? And is there a way that I can share what I've learned? Whether it's speaking to somebody about it, whether it's talking about it at the family dinner table, whether it's using one of these principles in your work, whatever it is, I'm going to trust with you that it's perfect. It's perfect because you all of us, have wonderful gifts to offer, and we are in a time when these gifts are very much needed. So let's go ahead and anchor in that consciousness now as we pray.